Will.
Rebound. Only Catherine and Jan were in the conference room when Mikey arrived the next morning. She seemed enthusiastic and unbowed by the previous day's events, which was a pleasant surprise for Catherine. Once the others had arrived, Catherine kicked off the session with an abbreviated version of the prior day's speech. Okay, before we get started, I think it's good to remember why we are here. We have more cash, more experienced executives, better technology, and more connections than any of our competitors, and yet, at least two of them are ahead of us in the market. Our job is to increase revenue, profitability, and customer acquisition and retention, and maybe even put ourselves in a position for an IPO. But none of this will happen if we don't function as a team. She paused, surprised at how closely her report seemed to be listening. It was as if they were hearing it for the first time. Any questions? Instead of just sitting there silently, a number of the staff members shook their heads as if to say, "No questions, let's get started." At least, that's how Catherine interpreted it. For the next few hours, the group reviewed the material they had covered the previous day. After an hour or so, Martin and Nick seemed to be losing a little interest, and JR became more distracted each time his cell phone vibrated and went unanswered. Catherine decided to address their concerns before they started talking among themselves. "I know that you're all probably starting to wonder, didn't we do this yesterday? And I realize it's repetitive. But this stuff won't stick unless we understand how to apply it completely." For another hour, the group discussed the implications of their various style preferences and the collective opportunities and challenges that those styles created. Mikey made few comments, and whenever she did speak, the flow of conversation seemed to slow dramatically. Martin, too, said little, but seemed to be paying attention and following the conversation nonetheless. By mid-morning, they had completed their review of interpersonal styles and team behaviors. And then, with less than an hour until lunch, Catherine decided to introduce the most important exercise of the day, one that she would look back on later as a moment of truth for Mikey and the rest of the team. Awareness. Walking back to the whiteboard, Catherine explained, "Remember, teamwork begins by building trust, and the only way to do that is to overcome our need for invulnerability." She wrote the word invulnerability next to trust on the whiteboard. Then she continued, "And so, we're all going to demonstrate vulnerability this morning in a low-risk but relevant way." She then asked everyone to spend 5 minutes deciding what they believed were their single biggest strength and weakness in terms of their contribution to Decision Tech's success or failure. "I don't want you to give me some generic weakness, and I don't want you glossing over your strengths because you're too modest or embarrassed to tell us what you think you're really good at. Take this simple exercise seriously and be willing to put yourself out there." When it was clear that everyone had finished jotting down their notes, Catherine began the discussion. "Okay, I'll go first." She looked at her notes briefly. "I think my biggest strength, at least the strength that will have the biggest impact on our success, is my ability to see through fluffy, superfluous information and cut to the point that matters. I have a way of eliminating unnecessary details and getting to the heart of an issue, and that should save us a lot of time." She paused before continuing. "My weakness is that I am not the world's best external spokesperson. In fact, I'm bad at it. I tend to downplay the importance of public relations, and I'm not a talented or tactful speaker when it comes to being in front of a large group, or, even worse, a television camera. I'm going to need help with that if we're going to accomplish everything that we hope to." With the exception of JR and Mikey, everyone was taking notes as Catherine spoke. She liked that. "Okay, who wants to go next?" No one volunteered immediately. Everyone was looking around, some hoping that one of their peers would volunteer. Others seemed to be asking permission to step forward. Finally, Nick broke the ice. "I'll go." "Okay, let's see." He reviewed his notes. "My biggest strength is my lack of fear when it comes to negotiation and management of outside companies, whether they're partners, vendors, or competitors. I don't have any problem pushing them to do more than they want to do. My biggest weakness, however, is that I sometimes come across as arrogant." A few of Nick's peers laughed a little nervously. He smiled and continued, "Yes, I've had that problem since I was in college, and probably before. I can be sarcastic and even rude at times, and sometimes I come across sounding like I think I'm smarter than everyone else. And that might be okay, I suppose, if I'm dealing with a vendor, but with you guys it could probably piss you off a little, which I don't think is going to help us get where we want to go." Jeff commented, It sounds like your strength and weakness are rooted in the same things. Martin, to everyone's surprise, voiced his agreement. Isn't that usually the case? Heads around the table nodded. Catherine was impressed by the apparent honesty of Nick's remarks and the willingness of the other staff members to make comments. She was glad he went first. Good. That was exactly the kind of thing I'm looking for. Who's next? Jan volunteered and talked about her management skills and attention to detail as strengths, something everyone agreed with immediately. Then she admitted being more conservative about finances than the CFO of a startup should be. She explained that this was a result of her training at larger companies and her concern that her peers were not concerned enough about managing expenses. Still, I am probably making it harder for you all to meet me halfway by being so controlling. Carlos assured her that the rest of the group could probably take a step or two in her direction. Jeff went next. He struggled in his attempt to call out his amazing networking skills and ability to build partnerships with investors and partners, but Jan wouldn't let him off the hook. Come on now, Jeff. If we've done one thing well, it's been raising boatloads of money and getting investors excited about the company. Don't downplay your role in that. Jeff reluctantly accepted her kind-hearted rebuke, and then blew everyone away with his admission of weakness. I am pretty afraid to fail, and so I tend to over-engineer things and do them myself. I don't like to tell other people what to do, which, ironically, only makes it more likely that I'm going to fail. For the slightest moment, Jeff seemed to fight back emotions and then recovered instantly. He was sure no one noticed, and I think that's probably the biggest reason that we haven't succeeded and that I'm not the CEO anymore. He paused and then added quickly, which I'm okay with, really. In fact, I'm pretty happy to be out of that job. The group laughed in a supportive way. Catherine couldn't believe that the first three people to step forward had done so well. For a moment, she began to entertain hopes that the momentum would continue and the day would be a runaway hit. And then Mikey spoke. Okay, I'll go next. Unlike her peers who had gone before her, Mikey looked at her notes almost the entire time that she talked. My biggest strength is my understanding of the technology market and how to communicate with analysts and the media. My biggest weakness is my poor financial skills. Silence. No comments, no questions, nothing. Like Catherine, most everyone in the room was torn between two emotions. Relief that Mikey was finished, and disappointment at the shallow nature of her response. At that moment, Catherine didn't feel that it would be right to force her vice president of marketing to be more vulnerable. Mikey had to do it herself. With every second that went by, the group quietly begged for someone to break the silence. Carlos put them out of their misery. Okay, I'll go next. Doing his best to bring the quality of the conversation back to a higher level, he talked about his follow-through as a strength and his failure to update people on his progress as a weakness. After he finished, Jan jumped in. Carlos, I think you missed on both of your answers. Catherine, not knowing that Carlos and Jan had become fairly close, was surprised by the directness of her remark. Jan continued, First, as thorough as you are, your willingness to do the shit work and not complain is your strength. I know that sounds terrible, but I don't know what would happen around here if you weren't bailing us out all the time. A number of the others voiced their agreement. And, on the negative side, I think you could tell us what you're thinking more during meetings. You hold back too much. Everyone seemed to wait to see how Carlos would respond, but he just nodded his head and took a note. Okay. J.R. volunteered to go next and brought the room to a roar when he explained, Clearly, my biggest strength is my follow-through and attention to detail. The group enjoyed the laughter for a few minutes until J.R. continued, Seriously, I'm pretty good at building strong personal relationships with customers. In fact, I'm really good at that. He said it modestly enough for everyone to appreciate. On the downside, if I don't think something is terribly important, which usually means it isn't going to get me closer to closing a deal, I can sometimes blow it off. Sometimes? Asked Nick. The room howled again. J.R. blushed. I know, I just can't seem to get around to my to-do list. I don't know why, but I think that hurts the team. Martin was the only remaining executive. Okay, I think I'm next. He took a deep breath. I hate talking about myself this way, but if I have to, I'd say that I'm good at solving problems, doing analysis, stuff like that. What I'm not so good at is communicating with human beings. He stopped. I mean, it's not that I can't do it, but I really prefer people who aren't sensitive. I like to have conversations with people on a purely intellectual level and not to have to worry about what they're feeling or anything like that. Does that make sense?
Sure, said Jeff, who decided to take a risk. The problem is that it can sometimes make people think you don't like them, that they're a waste of your time.
Martin seemed visibly disappointed by Jeff's remark.
No, that's not it at all. I mean, that's not what I intend. Crap. That's bad. I don't mean that at all, but I suppose I can see how it comes across that way. I don't know how to change that.
For the first time all morning, Mikey chimed in, smiling.
Years of psychotherapy, my friend, and even then you probably won't be able to change it. You're just an arrogant SOB. But then again, isn't every CTO in the Valley?
Mikey laughed. No one else did, with the exception of Martin, who seemed embarrassed by her remark and wanted to add to its sense of being humorous. Inside, he was melting. Catherine would later kick herself for not calling Mikey on a remark, which at the time Catherine attributed to her astonishingly low emotional intelligence. Whatever the case, it was clear to her now that Mikey's behavior was having a very real impact on the rest of the group. Ego. When everyone had found their seats around the table, Catherine announced a change in direction. Okay, we're going to move all the way to the final dysfunction, but we'll be revisiting the fear of vulnerability topic and the need for trust many, many times again over the course of the next month. If anyone isn't looking forward to that, you'd better brace yourself. Everyone assumed she was talking to Mikey. None of them could have guessed that another member of the team was struggling as much as she was. Catherine described the next dysfunction by going to the whiteboard and writing the phrase, inattention to results, at the top of the triangle. We're going to the top of the chart now to talk about the ultimate dysfunction, the tendency of team members to seek out individual recognition and attention at the expense of results. And I'm referring to collective results, the goals of the entire team. Nick asked, is this about ego?
Well, I suppose that's part of it, agreed Catherine. But I'm not saying that there's no place for ego on a team. The key is to make the collective ego greater than the individual ones.
I'm not sure I understand what this has to do with results, Jeff remarked.
Well, when everyone is focused on results and using those to define success, it is difficult for ego to get out of hand. No matter how good an individual on the team might be feeling about his or her situation, if the team loses, everyone loses.
Catherine could see that a few of her reports were not quite with her yet, so she took another approach. I told you yesterday that my husband is a basketball coach at St. Jude's High School in San Mateo.
He's a damn good basketball coach, explained Nick. He's been getting job offers from colleges since I was in high school, and every year he turns them down. He's a legend.
Catherine was proud of her husband and enjoyed Nick's commentary.
Yeah, I suppose he is something of an anomaly, and he's certainly good at what he does. Anyway, he is all about the team. And as good as his teams are, few of his kids play ball at big colleges because, frankly, they're not all that talented. They win because they play team basketball, and that usually allows them to beat bigger, faster, and more talented groups of players.
Nick was nodding his head with the certainty of someone who had lost to St. Jude's many times.
Well, every once in a while, Ken, that's my husband, gets a player on his team who doesn't really care about results, or at least not the results of the team. I remember a kid a few years ago who was interested only in his own statistics and whether he received individual recognition, all-league, picture in the paper, that sort of stuff. If the team lost, he'd be in a good mood as long as he was getting his points. And even when the team won, he would be unhappy if he didn't score enough.
Jan was curious. What did your husband do about him?
Catherine smiled, eager to tell them more about Ken. That's the interesting thing. This kid was without a doubt one of the most talented players on the team. But Ken benched him. The team played better without him, and he eventually quit.
Harsh, remarked J.R.
Yeah, but he came out the next year with a very different attitude, and went on to play for St. Mary's College after he graduated. He'll tell you now that it was the most important year of his life.
Jan was still curious. Do you think most people like that can change?
Catherine didn't hesitate.
No.
For every kid like that one, there are 10 who never made it.
The group seemed sobered by the definitive response, and more than one of them were thinking about Mikey at that moment.
And as harsh as that may sound, Ken always says that his job is to create the best team possible, not to shepherd the careers of individual athletes, and that's how I look at my job.
Jeff decided to ask the group a question.
Anyone here play team sports in high school or college?
Catherine wanted to stop Jeff's poll and keep the discussion moving in the direction she had planned,
but she decided that a little impromptu discussion was probably as valuable for the team as anything else, as long as it had something to do with teamwork. Jeff went around the room, giving every person a chance to respond to his question. Nick reported that he'd played baseball in college. Carlos was a linebacker in high school. Martin probably announced, "I played football, the original kind." Everyone chuckled at their European colleague. Mikey said she ran track in high school. When Nick questioned her, "But that's an individual," she interrupted him cleverly, "I ran on the relay team." Catherine reminded everyone that she was a volleyball player. Jan reported that she was a cheerleader and a member of the dance team. "And if anyone here says those aren't teams, I'm going to cut your budget in half," they laughed. Jeff confessed his lack of athletic aptitude. "You see, I don't understand why everyone thinks sports is the only way to learn about teamwork. I never played sports much, even as a kid, but I was in a band in high school and college, and I think I figured out the team thing from that." Catherine saw an opportunity to regain control of the discussion. "Aha, that's a good point. First of all, you can definitely learn teamwork from lots of different activities, pretty much anything that involves a group of people working together. But there's a reason that sports are so prevalent when it comes to teams." The seventh grade teacher and Catherine suddenly emerged, wanting to give her pupils a chance to answer her next question themselves. "Does anyone know what that is?" Like so many times in her classroom, the group seemed to have no clue. But Catherine knew that if she could tolerate the silence for a moment, soon enough someone would come up with the answer. This time it was Martin. "The score." As usual, Martin provided little context for his answer. "Explain," commanded Catherine, just as she would have done with one of her students.
"Well, in most sports, there is a clear score at the end of the game that determines whether you succeeded or failed. There is little room for ambiguity, which means there is little room for..." He paused to find the right words. "For subjective, interpretive, ego-driven success, if you know what I mean."
Heads around the room nodded to say that everyone did.
"Wait a second," demanded J.R. "Are you telling me that athletes don't have egos?"
Martin seemed at a loss, so Catherine jumped in.
"Well, they have huge egos. But great athletes' egos are usually tied to a clear result, winning. They just want to win. More than making the All-Star team, more than getting their picture on a box of Wheaties, and yes, more than making money.
I'm not sure there are many of those kinds of teams around anymore, at least not in professional sports," declared Nick. Catherine smiled, and that's the beauty. The teams that figure it out have a bigger advantage than ever before because most of their competitors are just a bunch of individuals looking out for themselves.
Mikey was looking a little bored. "What does this have to do with the software company?"
Again, Mikey brought the conversation to a halt.
But Catherine wanted to encourage her in any way she could, though she was already starting to doubt the likelihood of turning her around.
"Another good question. This has everything to do with us. You see, we're going to make our collective results as important as the score at a football game. We aren't going to leave any room for interpretation when it comes to our success, because that only creates the opportunity for individual ego to sneak in."
"Don't we already have a scoreboard?" Mikey persisted.
"You're talking about profit?" asked Catherine. Mikey nodded and made a face, as if to say, "What else?" Catherine continued patiently.
"Certainly, profit is a big part of it, but I'm talking more about near-term results. If you let profit be your only guide to results, you won't be able to know how the team is doing until the season is almost over."
"Now I'm confused," admitted Carlos.
"Isn't profit the only score that matters?"
Catherine smiled. "Yeah, I'm starting to get a little too academic here, so let me make this simple. Our job is to make the results that we need to achieve so clear to everyone in this room that no one would even consider doing something purely to enhance his or her individual status or ego, because that would diminish our ability to achieve our collective goals. We would all lose."
Something seemed to be catching on just slightly, so Catherine pushed forward. "The key, of course, is to define our goals, our results, in a way that is simple enough to grasp easily and specific enough to be actionable. Profit is not actionable enough. It needs to be more closely related to what we do on a daily basis. And to that end, let's see if we can come up with something right now."
Goals. Catherine then broke everyone into groups of two or three and asked each group to propose a list of results categories that might serve as the team's scoreboard. "Don't quantify any of this yet. Just create the categories." Within the hour, the group had generated more than 15 different kinds of results categories. By combining some and eliminating others, they narrowed them to 7. Revenue, expenses, new customer acquisition, current customer satisfaction, employee retention, market awareness, and product quality. They also decided that these should be measured monthly, because waiting a full quarter to track results didn't give them enough opportunities to detect problems and alter activities sufficiently. Unfortunately, now that the discussion was turning back toward the business, some of the levity in the room seemed to evaporate, and as usual, it would be replaced by criticism. Martin began,
"I'm sorry, but this is nothing new, Catherine. Those are pretty much the same metrics that we've been using for the past 9 months."
It felt as if part of Catherine's credibility was diminishing right before their eyes. J.R. piled on,
"Yeah, and none of it has helped us drive revenue. Frankly, I'm not sure any of these matter if we don't get a few deals closed and fast."
Catherine was almost amused at the predictability of what was unfolding before her. As soon as the reality of business problems is reintroduced to a situation like this one, she thought, people revert back to the behaviors that put them in the difficult situation in the first place. But she was ready.
"Okay, Martin, can you tell me what our market awareness goal for last quarter was?"
Mikey corrected her boss.
"We call it public relations activity."
"Okay, fine." She turned back to Martin. "Can you tell me exactly what the PR goal was?"
"No, but I'm sure that Mikey can. I can tell you what our product development dates are, though."
"Okay. Then just tell me how we did in terms of public relations activity." She directed the question at Martin again, making it clear that he ought to know the answer. He seemed puzzled.
"Hell, I don't know. I assume that Jeff and Mikey talk about that stuff. But I'm also assuming that we didn't do very well, given our sales numbers."
Mikey was remarkably calm, which only made her subsequent remarks all the more unpleasant.
"Listen, I came to the meetings every week with my PR numbers, but no one ever asked about them. And besides, I can't get us any press if we don't sell anything."
Though J.R. should have been more upset than anyone by the remark, Martin was the one to respond, and he did so sarcastically.
"That's funny. I always thought that the purpose of marketing was to drive sales. I guess I've had that backward."
Almost as though she hadn't heard Martin's remark, Mikey continued to defend herself.
"I can tell you that the problems we're having are not due to marketing. In fact, I think my department has done remarkably well, given what we've had to work with."
Carlos wanted to say, "But your department cannot be doing well because the company is failing. And if the company is failing, then we are all failing, and there's no way that we can justify the performance of our own departments." But he didn't want to push Mikey any harder, sensing that his colleague might snap under the pressure. And so he let it go. As frustrated as everyone was at that moment, Catherine was sure that a much-needed melee was about to ensue. But just like that, the conversation came to a halt and died. "So this is how it works," she thought to herself. Deep tissue. Catherine was determined not to lose the momentum.
"Okay, I think I see the underlying problem."
Jeff smiled and responded sarcastically, but in a nice way.
"Really?"
Catherine laughed. "Pretty observant of me, huh? Anyway, when I talk about focusing on results instead of individual recognition, I'm talking about everyone adopting a set of common goals and measurements, and then actually using them to make collective decisions on a daily basis." Seeing that they weren't going to cede the obvious point easily, Catherine decided to shift back toward a more questioning approach. "How often did you all talk about moving resources from one department to another in the middle of the quarter in order to make sure that you could achieve a goal that was in jeopardy?" The looks on their faces said, "Never." "And how disciplined were you during meetings about reviewing the goals in detail and drilling down on why they were or weren't being met?" She already knew the answer. Jeff explained, "I'd have to say that I just considered it Mikey's job to do marketing, Martin's to develop products, JR's to make sales. I would pitch in whenever I could, but otherwise I let them be accountable for their own areas, and I dealt with their issues on a one-on-one basis whenever I could." Catherine went back to the sports analogy, hoping this would get through to them. "Okay, imagine a basketball coach in a locker room at halftime. He calls the team's center into his office to talk with him one-on-one about the first half, and then he does the same with the point guard, the shooting guard, the small forward, and the power forward, without any of them knowing what everyone else was talking about. That's not a team. It's a collection of individuals. And it was clear to everyone in the room that this was exactly what the Decision Tech executive staff was. Catherine was smiling in disbelief, as if to say, "I can't believe that I have to tell you this." In a more patient tone, she said, "All of you, every one of you, are responsible for sales, not just JR. All of you are responsible for marketing, not just Mikey. All of you are responsible for product development, customer service, and finance. Does that make sense?" Confronted by the simplicity and truth of Catherine's plea, and their obvious inadequacies as a group, any illusions of unity that had survived the first day and a half now appeared to be gone. Nick was shaking his head, and then spoke as if he couldn't hold back any longer. "You know, I just wonder whether we have the right people sitting at this table. Maybe we need more heavy hitters who can get us into the right accounts and develop the right strategic partnerships." JR was not happy about the passive attack on sales, but as usual, he didn't respond. Catherine did. "Have you guys looked at your competitors' websites?" A few of them nodded, not knowing what she was getting at. "Do you know the track records of the people who are running those companies?" Blank looks on their faces. "Exactly. They don't have heavy hitters on their teams. Why do you think that they're making more progress than you are?" Jeff gave a half-hearted explanation. "Well, Wired Vineyard lined up a partnership with Hewlett-Packard right out of the gate, and Telecart is getting most of its revenue from professional services at this point." Catherine seemed unconvinced. "And what's stopping you from forming a partnership or adjusting your business plan like they did?" Jan raised her hand to speak, but didn't wait for Catherine to acknowledge her. "Don't take this wrong, Catherine, but could you start saying us and we instead of you? You're the CEO, and you're part of our team now." The room stopped, waiting to see how Catherine would handle the pointed comment. She looked down into her lap, as if she were trying to decide how to respond, and then looked back up. "You're right, Jan. I'm not a consultant here. Thanks for calling me on it. I guess I just don't feel like I'm part of the group yet." "Join the club." Jan's response caught everyone off guard. "What do you mean by that?" asked Nick. "Well, I don't know about you guys, but I don't feel connected to what's going on outside of finance. Sometimes I feel like a consultant myself. At other companies where I've worked, I've always been more involved in sales and operations, and right now I feel isolated in my own area." Carlos agreed with her. "Yeah, it does seem like we don't really have the same goals in mind when we're at staff meetings. It almost feels like we're all lobbying for more resources for our departments or trying to avoid getting involved in anything outside our own areas." It was hard for anyone to argue with Carlos's logic. He continued, "And you guys think I'm such a prince for volunteering, but that's how everyone works at most of the companies I've worked for." Catherine was relieved to see that a few of the people on the team were breaking through, which is why she was so blindsided by the reaction to her next remark. "The politics around here are astounding, and they're a result of everyone being far too ambiguous about what we're all trying to accomplish, and that makes it easy to focus on individual success." Nick was frowning now. "Wait a second. I agree that we're not the most healthy group of executives in the Valley, but don't you think you're going a little too far when you say we're political?" "No. I think that this is one of the most political groups I've ever seen." As the words came out of her mouth, Catherine realized that she probably could have been a little more delicate. Right away, she could sense the people in the room banding together to challenge her harsh critique. Even Jeff took issue. "I don't know, Catherine. This might be a function of your not having worked in high tech. I've worked in some pretty political companies in the past, and I don't know if we're all that bad." Catherine wanted to respond, but decided to let the others empty their chambers first. Nick fired away. "I think we're about average, based on what I've heard from other executives. Keep in mind, this is a tough market." Smelling blood in the water now, Mikey dove in. "I agree. I mean, you've joined the company at a weird time, and to make that statement just after a few weeks is pretty careless." Although her colleagues didn't agree with the harshness of that remark, Mikey knew that they weren't going to challenge her on this one and risk wasting an opportunity to regain a little of the upper hand with their new boss. Catherine waited until no more comments came and then responded. "First of all, I am sorry if my comment sounded flip. You're right in that I haven't worked in high tech, and so my reference point could be a little off." She let the partial apology sink in before continuing and made sure not to begin her next sentence with the word "but." "And I certainly don't want to come across as condescending to you, because that doesn't help us get where we need to go." Catherine sensed that a few of the team members, Jan, Carlos, and Jeff, received her statement in the sincere vein in which it was intended. She continued, "At the same time, I don't want to downplay the very dangerous situation that we're all in. We have big problems, and I have observed enough of this group to know that politics are alive and well here." As graciously as she acknowledged the concerns of her people, Catherine was certainly not backing down. And frankly, I would rather overstate the problem than understate it. But only for the good of the team, not for my own satisfaction, I can assure you of that. Because of her consistent behavior over the past day and a half, and the confidence with which Catherine made a remark, most of her staff seemed convinced that she was sincere. Nick frowned, but Catherine couldn't tell if he was angry or confused. It was confusion. "Maybe you should tell us exactly what you mean by politics." Catherine thought for just a moment, and then answered as though she were reciting from a book she had memorized. "Politics is when people choose their words and actions based on how they want others to react rather than based on what they really think." The room was silent. Martin, as serious as ever, cut through the tension. "Okay, we're definitely political." Though he had not intended to be funny, Carlos and Jan laughed out loud. Jeff just smiled and nodded his head. As compelling as the point she was making were, Catherine could see that members of the group were still trying to decide whether to embrace her ideas or attack them. It became immediately clear that the next move would be an attack. Attack. To Catherine's surprise, it was J.R. who challenged her, and he wasn't particularly nice. "I'm sorry, but you're not going to make us wait 3 weeks to find out what the other dysfunctions are you? Can you just tell us what they are so we can figure out what's not working and get on with it?" Taken at face value, the comment would have been somewhat innocuous, maybe even a compliment if it were offered in the spirit of true curiosity. But in that moment, with the tone in which it was asked, and given the usually mellow nature of the person who posed the question, it was the harshest comment thus far of the off-site. Had Catherine been a less secure executive, she would have been rocked by the remark, and for a moment she almost let herself get disappointed that the goodwill she thought she was generating had dissipated so quickly. But then she realized that this was precisely what she needed in order to provoke real change in the group, honest resistance. As much as she wanted to stick to her plan and gradually unveil her simple model, Catherine decided to take J.R.'s advice. "No problem. Let's go through the other three dysfunctions right now." Exhibition. Catherine went to the whiteboard, but before she filled in the second box from the bottom, she asked the group a question. "Why do you think that trust is important? What's the practical downside for a group that doesn't trust one another?" After a few seconds of silence, Jan tried to help Catherine out. "Morale problems, inefficiency." "That's a little too general. I'm looking for one very specific reason why trust is necessary." No one seemed ready to offer an answer, so Catherine quickly provided it for them. Just above absence of trust, she wrote, "fear of conflict." If we don't trust one another, then we aren't going to engage in open, constructive, ideological conflict, and will just continue to preserve a sense of artificial harmony. Nick challenged, "But we seem to have plenty of conflict, and not a lot of harmony, I might add." Catherine shook her head. "No, you have tension, but there is almost no constructive conflict. Passive, sarcastic comments are not the kind of conflict I'm talking about." Carlos weighed in, "But why is harmony a problem?" "It's the lack of conflict that's a problem. Harmony itself is good, I suppose, if it comes as a result of working through issues constantly and cycling through conflict. But if it comes only as a result of people holding back their opinions and honest concerns, then it's a bad thing. I'd trade that false kind of harmony any day for a team's willingness to argue effectively about an issue and then walk away with no collateral damage." Carlos accepted the explanation. Catherine pressed her luck. "After watching a few of your staff meetings, I can say with a degree of confidence that you don't argue very well. Your frustration sometimes surfaces in the form of subtle comments, but more often than not it is bottled up and carried around. Am I right?" Instead of answering her semi-rhetorical question and giving Catherine a modicum of satisfaction, Martin prodded her. "So, let's say we start arguing more.
I don't see how that is going to make us more effective. If anything, it's going to take up a lot more time.
Mikey and J.R. were nodding now. Catherine was ready to take them on, but Jan and Carlos stepped in for her. First, Jan. Don't you think we're wasting time as it is by not hashing things out? How long have we been talking about outsourcing IT? I think it comes up at every meeting, and half of us are for it, half are against it, and so it just sits there, because no one wants to piss anyone off. Carlos added, with a sense of conviction that he rarely showed, and ironically, that is exactly what pisses us off. Martin was growing more and more convinced, and wanted to learn about the rest of the model. Okay, what's the next one? That was as close to an acknowledgement of being right as Catherine was going to get from Martin. Catherine went back to the whiteboard. The next dysfunction of a team is the lack of commitment and the failure to buy into decisions. She wrote the dysfunction above the previous one. And the evidence of this one is ambiguity, which she wrote next to it. Nick was re-engaging now.
Commitment? Sounds like something my wife complained about before we got married.
The group chuckled at his mediocre joke. Catherine was ready for the reaction. I'm talking about committing to a plan or a decision and getting everyone to clearly buy into it. That's why conflict is so important. As smart as he was, Martin was not afraid to admit his confusion.
I don't get it.
Catherine explained. It's as simple as this. When people don't unload their opinions and feel like they've been listened to, they won't really get on board.
They do if you make them, countered Nick. I'm guessing your husband doesn't let his players vote on whether they want to run wind sprints.
Catherine welcomed this kind of challenge.
No, he doesn't. But he'd let them make a case why they think they shouldn't. And if he disagreed with them, which in that situation I'm sure he would, he'd tell them why and then send them off running.
So this isn't a consensus thing. Jan's statement was really a question.
Heavens no, insisted Catherine, sounding like a schoolteacher again. Consensus is horrible. I mean, if everyone really agrees on something, and consensus comes about quickly and naturally, well, that's terrific. But that isn't how it usually works. And so consensus becomes an attempt to please everyone, which usually turns into displeasing everyone equally.
Jeff made his remark with a look of pain on his face, as though he were reliving a bad memory.
Exactly. The point here is that most reasonable people don't have to get their way in a discussion. They just need to be heard, and to know that their input was considered and responded to.
So where does the lack of commitment come into play? Nick wanted to know.
Well, some teams get paralyzed by their need for complete agreement and their inability to move beyond debate.
GR spoke up. Disagree and commit.
Excuse me?
Catherine wanted him to explain.
Yeah, my last company we called it Disagree and Commit. You can argue about something and disagree, but still commit to it as though everyone originally bought into the decision completely.
That lit a bulb in Jeff. Okay, I see where conflict fits in. Even if people are generally willing to commit, they aren't going to do so because, Carlos interrupted, because they need to weigh in before they can really buy in.
The room seemed to understand that.
What's the last dysfunction? Everyone was surprised that it was Mikey who asked, and she actually seemed interested in the answer.
Catherine went to the board to fill in the last empty box. Before she could, Martin had opened his laptop and started typing. Everyone froze.
Catherine stopped and looked at her chief technologist, who seemed clueless about the new sense of tension in the room. And then suddenly it dawned on him.
I really am taking notes about this. Look.
He was attempting to show everyone the document that he was creating on his screen. Everyone was amused at Martin's anxiety about explaining his behavior and not wanting to violate the team rules. Catherine laughed, pleased that her engineer was suddenly enthusiastic about what was going on.
That's okay. We believe you. I'll let it slide this time.
Catherine looked at her watch and realized that the group hadn't taken a break for several hours.
It's late. Let's go ahead and break for a half hour. We'll finish this later.
Though they would deny it if asked, Catherine was certain that she saw disappointment on the faces of everyone in the room.
J.R. was big enough to admit it. Let's go ahead and do the last one. And then he added humorously, I don't think any of us are going to be able to relax if we don't know what it is.
As sarcastic as the comment could have sounded, buried just below the humor was a subtle but unmistakable sense of acknowledgement. Whether he was acknowledging the rudeness of his prior statement or the validity of what Catherine was explaining didn't seem as important as the tone of the comment itself. Catherine was glad to oblige. She went to the board for the last time and wrote, "Avoidance of accountability." She explained, "Once we achieve clarity and buy in, it is then that we have to hold each other accountable for what we sign up to do, for high standards of performance and behavior. And as simple as that sounds, most executives hate to do it, especially when it comes to a peer's behavior, because they want to avoid interpersonal discomfort." "What exactly do you mean by that?" Jeff asked. "I'm talking about that moment when you know you have to call one of your peers on something that matters, and you decide to let it go because you just don't want to experience that feeling when..." She paused, and Martin finished the sentence for her. "When you have to tell someone to shut down their email during meetings." "Exactly," Catherine confirmed appreciatively. Carlos added, "I hate this one. I just don't want to have to tell someone that their standards are too low. I'd rather just tolerate it and avoid the..." He tried to think of the right way to describe it. Jan did it for him. "The interpersonal discomfort." Carlos nodded. "Yeah, I guess that's really what it is." He thought about it for a moment, then continued, "But it's weird. I don't have as much of a problem telling my direct reports what I think. I seem to hold them accountable most of the time, even when it's a sticky issue." Catherine was thrilled by the remark. "Right. As hard as it is sometimes to enter the danger with your direct reports and confront them with something sticky, it's even harder with your peers." "Why's that?" asked Jeff. Before Catherine could answer, Nick explained, "Because we're supposed to be equals. And who am I to tell Martin how to do his job, or Mikey, or Jan? Feels like I'm sticking my nose into the business when I do." Catherine explained further. "The peer-to-peer thing is certainly one of the issues that makes team accountability hard, but there's something else." No one seemed to have a clue, and Catherine was ready to answer her own question. Just then, Mikey's face lit up like she had just solved a puzzle. "No buy-in." "What?" asked Nick. "No buy-in. People aren't going to hold each other accountable if they haven't clearly bought into the same plan. Otherwise, it seems pointless because they're just going to say, 'I never agreed to that anyway.'" Catherine was shocked at her unlikely star pupil, and if that wasn't enough, Mikey went on to say, "This actually makes sense." Everyone looked at one another as if to say, "Did you hear what I heard?" On that note, Catherine excused the team for the last break of the day. Film noir. No matter how many times Catherine had built or refurbished teams, she never got used to watching the inevitable ebbs and flows. "Why can't we just make progress in one fell swoop?" she asked herself. In theory, with Mikey and Martin now seemingly on board, it should have been relatively easy to make the team work. But Catherine knew that reality did not usually match theory. She still had a long way to go. 2 years of behavioral reinforcement around politics is a tough thing to break, and one lecture, no matter how compelling, is not going to do it. The painful, heavy lifting was still to come. With just a few hours until the end of the first off-site, Catherine was tempted to end the session early and send everyone back to work on a relative high. But that would have been a waste of 2 critical hours, she thought. She needed to make as much progress as possible, and soon, to ensure that the board wouldn't be tempted to cut her efforts short. When the group had returned from their break, Catherine decided to introduce a relatively entertaining discussion topic relating to conflict, one that would hold her interest late in the day. "Let's talk more about conflict." She felt the room sink just a little at the prospect of taking on such a touchy subject, but Catherine was actually looking forward to this part. "Someone tell me what the single most important arena or setting for conflict is." After a pause, Nick took a stab. "Meetings?" "Yes, meetings. If we cannot learn to engage in productive ideological conflict during meetings, we are through." Jan smiled. "And I'm not joking when I say that. Our ability to engage in passionate, unfiltered debate about what we need to do to succeed will determine our future as much as any products we develop or partnerships we sign." It was late afternoon now, and Catherine sensed that her team was drifting into post-lunch food coma. Her words didn't seem to be getting through to them, and she would have to make this interesting if she had any chance of making it stick. "How many of you would rather go to a meeting than a movie?" No hands went up. "Why not?" After a pause, Jeff realized that her question was not a rhetorical one. Because movies are more interesting, even the bad ones. His peers chuckled. Catherine smiled. Right. But if you really think about it, meetings should be at least as interesting as movies. My son, Will, went to film school, and I learned from him that meetings and movies have a lot in common. The group seemed more doubtful than intrigued, but at least Catherine had their interest for the moment. Think about it this way. A movie, on average, runs anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours in length. Staff meetings are about the same. Heads nodded, politely. And yet, meetings are interactive, whereas movies are not. We can't yell at the actor on the screen, "Don't go into the house, you idiot!" Most of the group laughed. Are they actually starting to like me? Catherine wondered in a brief and uncharacteristic moment of insecurity. She went on, and more importantly, movies have no real impact on our lives. They don't require us to act a certain way based on the outcome of the story, and yet meetings are both interactive and relevant. We get to have our say, and the outcome of any given discussion often has a very real impact on our lives. So, why do we dread meetings? No one answered, so Catherine prodded them. Come on, why do we hate them? They're boring. Mikey seemed to enjoy her answer more than she should have. Right, they're boring. And to understand why, all we need to do is compare them to films. Now the group was starting to get interested again. Catherine continued. Whether it's an action movie, a drama, a comedy, or an artsy French film, every movie worth watching must have one key ingredient. What is that ingredient? Martin answered dryly. Well, since we're talking about conflict, I guess that's it. Yes, I suppose that I telegraphed that one, didn't I? Every great movie has conflict. Without it, we just don't care what happens to the characters. Catherine paused for effect before delivering her next line. Let me assure you that from now on, every staff meeting we have will be loaded with conflict, and they won't be boring. And if there is nothing worth debating, then we won't have a meeting. The team seemed to like that statement, and Catherine wanted to deliver on her promise immediately. And so, we're going to start right now. She checked her watch. We have almost 2 hours until we break today, and so I thought I would have our first substantive decision-making meeting as a group. Nick objected, with a serious look on his face. Catherine, I'm not sure I can do this. Caught off guard, everyone waited for an explanation. I never received an agenda. Everyone, including Jeff, laughed at the good-natured teasing of their former CEO. Application. Catherine wasted no time. Okay, here's the deal. Before we leave this meeting, we're going to establish something I call our overarching goal for the rest of the year. There's no reason that we can't do this now, right here, today. Someone take a stab. What do you mean exactly? Jan asked. Like a theme? Yeah. The question we need to answer is this. If we do anything between now and the end of the year, what should that be? Nick and JR responded in unison. Market share. Heads around the table nodded, except Martin's and Jan's. Catherine called them out. You two don't seem convinced. What are you thinking? Martin explained. I think it's product improvement. Jan added, and I'm not so sure that cost containment isn't our top priority. Catherine resisted the temptation to address their suggestions herself. Someone take them on. J.R. obliged. Okay, I think that our technology is as good as or better than both of our top competitors. And yet, they're getting more traction than we are. If we fall too far behind in terms of market capture, it won't matter what our products can do. Martin barely frowned. If that's the case, then imagine what things would look like if we fell behind in products. Ever the peacemaker, Carlos asked, can't we have more than one overarching goal? Catherine shook her head. If everything is important, then nothing is. She resisted any further explanation, wanting the group to work through it. Jan persisted. Can someone tell me why cost containment isn't the goal? Mikey responded quickly. Because if we don't find a way to make money, avoiding spending it does us no good. As annoying as Mikey's tone was, the truth of the statement could not be denied. Even Jan nodded in concession. Catherine made a quick comment. This is the most productive conversation I've heard since I've been here. Keep going. That was enough to give Jeff the courage he needed to make his point. He winced, as though he didn't want to prolong the conversation. I don't know. I'm not sure that market share is the right measure at this point. We don't really know what the size of the market is and where it's headed. He paused while he decided what to say next. I think we just need more good customers. Whether we have 20 more or 20 less than our competition doesn't seem to matter as much.
Mikey jumped in. That's the same as market share.
I don't think so, Jeff offered non-defensively. Mikey rolled her eyes. Nick wanted to avoid a repeat of the previous day's encounter with Mikey.
Listen, whether we call it market share or customers doesn't really matter. We just need to sell.
Now Catherine spoke. I think it matters. What do you think, JR?
I think Jeff is right. If we get enough solid customers, the kind who will be active references for us, then we're doing fine.
Frankly, I don't care at this point what our competition is doing. That seems like a distraction more than anything else, at least until we get rolling and the market takes shape.
Martin seemed annoyed now. Listen, this is the same kind of conversation we have at every meeting. If it's not market share versus revenue, it's customer retention versus satisfaction. It all seems academic to me.
Catherine forced herself to be silent for a few moments as the room digested Martin's comment. Then she asked, how do those conversations usually end? Martin shrugged.
We run out of time, I guess.
Okay, let's bring this conversation to a close in the next 5 minutes. Does anyone here believe that the key to the next 9 months has something to do with market share, customers, revenue, etc.? If someone thinks we're in the wrong ballpark completely, speak up now and loudly.
People looked at one another and shrugged as if to say, I can't think of anything better.
Good. Then let's come to closure on exactly what we're talking about. I'd like to hear someone make a passionate plea for the answer being revenue. JR, how about you?
Well, one might argue that revenue is the right answer because we need cash. But frankly, that is far less important at this point than proving to the world that there are customers out there who are interested in our products. Revenue is not as important as closing deals and getting new customers.
He had just talked himself out of the revenue answer. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense to me.
Catherine pushed on for clarity.
So I'm not hearing anyone saying that revenue is our most important goal.
Jan squinted and spoke up. Are you saying that we don't need to have a revenue goal?
No, we will definitely have a revenue goal. It's just that revenue is not the ultimate measure of our success right now. We've narrowed it down to market share and new customers.
Someone, tell me why market share is the right answer.
Mikey.
Market share is how analysts and the press define success. It's as simple as that.
Martin countered.
No, Mikey. Whenever I'm interviewed as a founder of the company, people ask me about key customers. They want marquee company names and people who are willing to vouch for us.
Mikey shrugged.
Catherine challenged her. Are you shrugging because you don't agree and you're giving up, or because you feel like he made a more compelling point than you can counter?
Mikey thought about it. The second one.
Okay, we're down to new customer acquisition. Someone tell me why this should be our collective overarching goal.
This time Catherine didn't need to call anyone out. Carlos volunteered.
Because that will give the press something to write about. It will give our employees confidence. It will provide more product feedback for Martin and his engineers. And it will give us references to go out and get more customers next year.
JR chimed in.
Not to mention follow-on sales.
Ladies and gentlemen, Catherine announced, unless I hear something extremely compelling in the next 5 seconds that makes me think otherwise, I believe we have a primary goal.
Members of the staff looked at each other as if to say, are we really agreeing on something?
But Catherine wasn't through yet. She wanted specifics.
How many new customers do we need to get?
The group seemed to be invigorated by the tangible nature of the discussion.
For the next 30 minutes, they debated the number of new customers they could and should acquire.
Jan lobbied for the most, followed by Nick and Mikey.
JR was frustrated and argued hard for the fewest, wanting to keep his quota low so as not to discourage his salespeople.
Jeff, Carlos, and Martin were somewhere in between.
As the debate seemed to be running out of steam, Catherine jumped in.
Okay, unless someone is holding something back, I think I've heard all the opinions in the room. And we are probably not going to agree completely, which is fine because there's no science here. I'm going to set the number based on your input, and we're going to stick with that number.
She paused for a moment, then continued.
Jan, we aren't going to do 30 deals this year, even though I know how much you'd love that revenue on the books. And JR, I can appreciate your desire to keep your folks motivated, but 10 is not enough. Our competitors are doing more than double that, and the analysts will throw up all over us if we come in at 10.
J.R. seemed to offer no resistance to Catherine's logic.
She continued, I think that if we can close 18 new customers with at least 10 being willing to be active references, we will be doing well.
She paused to allow any last comments.
When none came, she declared, "All right, then. We will have 18 new customers by December 31st. No one could deny that in 20 minutes, the team had made more progress than they normally did during a month of meetings. Over the next hour, they drilled down on the issue of new customers, discussing what each person, from marketing to finance to engineering, would need to do to make 18 deals possible. With 15 minutes to spare before the offsite was to officially end, Catherine decided to bring things to a close. "Okay, let's call it a day. We'll be having a staff meeting next week when we can dig deeper into some of these and other critical issues." The group seemed relieved to be finished. Catherine asked one final question. "Are there any comments, questions, or concerns people want to raise before we leave?" No one wanted to bring up a topic that would delay their departures, but Nick decided to make one comment. "I have to say that I think we made more progress during the past 2 days than I thought we would." Jan and Carlos nodded in agreement. Mikey, to everyone's surprise, didn't roll her eyes. Catherine wasn't sure whether Nick was